T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully Hanley.
You guys are ignorant and you're also naive.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score, Chicago's sports station.
The Bears have had their problems with Green Bay. Green Bay obviously is a very flawed team right now. They don't have the quarterback disguising what the issues are. Is this going to be an easy win for the Bears? Is 3 points when you get 3 for being at home, is that a good line?
Well, the line would be 6 or maybe 6.5 if Aaron Rodgers was coming to town, right? And that's a healthy favorite in the NFL for a road team to be almost a touchdown favorite. And that's what you were seeing at the beginning of the season.
If we're in here next Monday morning
without a victory Monday?
Without a victory Monday.
Well, now, see,
now that's a disaster.
Hey, if truly you believe you can contend this division,
yes,
and you're an ascending team, there's no excuse to lose this game. There's just not. That's still a pretty banged up Packers team. I know they got a lot of their offensive line back and Jordy Nelson's back out and all that. But the fact of the matter is the quarterback is not being allowed to do much of anything, kind of like the quarterback here. You have to find a way to win this game. You have the better defense for sure. There's no doubt about that.
Mully and Hanley.
Fruit and.
I'm Ragnar. Pay me.
That's how I roll, buddy.
Start your day with the teams you know.
Have you seen the Hawk bobblehead? They have a new bobblehead that they're giving away only to people who buy a hotel package at Sox Fest. It is Hawk in a powder blue leisure suit.
Oh, that was the look.
And he did so in the cover of Sports Illustrated. And I think it talks. I think it says,
Mercy! Dadgummit! Yeah! What are you doing, Wagner?
That would be a nice touch if they put the Hawk alarm clock in the rooms.
You can put it on the board, yeah!
Mully Hanley.
This is all tricky.
Here we go!
Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score. I love the idea of the Hawk. Hawk anything. I'm a big Hawk collector these days. Give me an alarm clock. Let me get a guy in a blue leisure suit. What more do you want out of life?
He's there for
I'm
you.
All over it.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited for the White Sox offseason. Even if they plan on doing nothing, it's just the idea that they've got a bunch of young guys.
And I believe Q actually thought about putting him on the Hawks top line.
Yeah, well, everyone has their issues. The Bulls fall to the Raptors 119-114.
They got started a little late.
That's like the perfect game for them, right? Because you don't want them to get results necessarily. You want them to be the hardworking, try hard team that comes back. But you don't really want them to be the team that's shocking the world and upsetting people, because you want them to get that pick, don't you? Isn't that the point of the season?
It's one of those nights, though, that Fred Hoiberg can't win. And maybe he just can't win no matter what night it is. Because by all accounts, he ripped into the team at halftime because they were sleepwalking in the first half. No shots, no energy. So here comes, on the muscle Fred, and he rips into the team. And Bobby Portis, of all people, welcome back, Bobby, in his debut, says that shows Fred growing as a coach. Bobby Portis has now got thoughts on the coach needing to grow. I mean, it was one thing when Jimmy Butler, who, by the way, had some more things to say about the Bulls, but when Bobby Portis is pointing, you know, trying to compliment the coach, it comes off as kind of a backhanded, you know, see, Fred's finally coaching. He's finally, you know, getting the guy's attention at halftime.
Fred is good with the talentless team.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. It seems like people are listening to him. It seems like the space
is
better.
But year three, he finally knows how to give a halftime rip job.
Well, no, I don't. I just think that they've got a bunch of guys that are on the verge of the NBA. And if they mouth off or do something.
Give him a college team. He can go college coach.
Fred's the guy in charge now because of the circumstance of the players. They don't have any stars, so everyone has to listen to the coach. It makes life a lot easier. Fred has gained credibility by being in his role with a bunch of guys that aren't really NBA talent.
But when a relatively young guy points out the fact that basically Fred never did this before,
right?
And he's growing as a coach. 2 more years, you might actually see something that looks
come back in 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kenny Williams, I'll tell you, Robin's a good manager. No, not even after five or whatever the hell it was.
I don't know.
Here's the quote, though. I got to tell you.
Yes.
It was kind of different, but I like that. Fred did that with us at halftime. It's a reflection of him growing up as a coach, too. I respect Fred to the utmost. It's like, I like the Fred, the new Fred. Okay.
Bobby also said he had his dream taken away for 3 weeks, and he doesn't want his dream taken away from him anymore.
Yeah, and he likes his crazy eyes. Apparently, his Twitter followers picked a side, and a lot of them went with Nico and went after his appearance. And the Nico v. Bobby, apparently a lot of the people who weighed in on his social media account, which he no longer pays attention to, chose Nico. They feared the beard.
Well, I thought he gave them a lift.
Oh, he did.
For what it was worth, he gave them a lift. And it's an interesting team just because they do space the floor a little bit and they got some guys that can shoot. But it's not a good team. And I think the Jimmy Butler stuff is pretty damning. You know, you bring up Fred, Jimmy, in the ESPN piece saying that they made him available because I said from the beginning, well, let's listen.
I probably went about a lot of things the wrong way. People don't work as hard as I do, and they don't expect the same things out of the game that I do. And that's my fault, and I've learned from that. And I said from the beginning it was either going to be me or the Fred Hoiberg route, and rightfully so, they took Fred. Good for them.
And he said he's got the February 9th game at the United Center marked on the schedule. I'm back, baby.
Yeah.
He's floating in a canoe. Was that Hang Time? Is that the show? He's floating in a canoe and just sitting there with the paddle across the boat. He's not P.J. Fleck. He's not rowing. He's just sitting there going, yeah, I told them from the beginning, me or the guy, the coach, and they went with the coach. And Fred responded by, oh, I don't think it was any one person. We just chose a direction.
What do you think of that? Is there any scenario in which you'd have chosen?
Do you
Fred
believe over? He actually sat down with Gar and Pax and said, "Here's the ultimatum. It's me or the coach."
No, I think that's more. I think that's looking back on it.
Yeah, kind of revisionist history.
Yeah.
Or
well, but I don't. I mean, sometimes you can, you can remember something as an event without a particular conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was either going to be me or him, and they went that route. Doesn't mean like I want Fred gone or that's it. Like I don't think
a
that
few
happened.
Years ago I thought it was the ultimatum unsaid or said was it's me or Derek. Pick a lane because they weren't.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of me ors.
Yeah, they'd lead the league in either or.
Either or, it was very fitting for the.
OAR.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of – Jimmy's kind of yesterday's hero. The Bulls have moved on. I have mentally moved away from that.
Yeah.
I don't spend any time wondering what might have been if Jimmy was still here. I don't think things be nearly as calm, and they're not calm. But I feel a sense of calm about it. I think Fred's doing a pretty decent job.
Jimmy also said Tibbs is now more of a touchy-feely people's coach.
Really?
Comes in, asks about how's the family, how's the girlfriend, how the kids.
He's really added the people aspect of it. Now he's coming in, he's laughing, he's joking around a little bit. He's asking, hey, how's your wife? How are your kids? Like, that's a big part of this thing because you got to understand basketball is not the most important thing in my life.
Is he still wearing the same tracksuit? Or sweatsuit?
Yeah, I mean, Tibbs got ripped apart when he left here.
Oh, yeah.
There was all this.
Right from the chairman's statement down.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it was this idea that, he was too much his own man. He wasn't willing. It's kind of what we talked about with Major League Baseball. You want a manager now that is willing to take instruction from the front office. It was that he, Tibbs was more interested in doing his own thing than groupthink.
Right.
And that's basically what the owner said in his release when he was kind of kicked him on the way out.
Organizations
the door.
Win championships and get out, get out,
right.
Get them the hell out.
No man is an island.
But the T-Wolves are 7-3, and that's the first time they've come out of the gate strong in
years.
He's
a really good coach.
Yeah, and now they actually have a bona fide star in Jimmy.
and he's devoted to his craft. He really wants to be a really good coach.
I mean, Kevin Love was the guy, but he was the only guy when he was there. And now it looks like.
And you know what? I don't think he was the guy. I think he looked more like the guy because he was the only guy.
He was a stat stuffer because, you could jack up what any shots you want.
And I think that's been proven since he's been in Cleveland. Not that he's not a good player, but
he had a pretty good night last night.
But he's not. He has great nights.
He had a great night.
He's not the.
He didn't make a three last night, and he still had a great offensive night. But
do you want the Bulls to get Jahlil Okafor? Do you think that's a good idea for them? Does that raise your affection for the team in any fashion? They are now apparently the lone favorite.
Yeah,
Atlanta too, but the Bulls ahead of them.
I mean, what is it going to cost you? Does the guy want to be here?
He might want to be here. I don't know if he wants to be here long term, but he might want to be here right now.
Is his position, you know, how important is that position anymore in the NBA?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. And does he raise you up to a point where, let's say he comes in and is good. Does that help you?
Yeah. I mean, he's 21. I mean,
no, but I'm saying, aren't you after that draft pick? Don't you need to get a really high draft pick and strike gold? Don't you need a Michael Jordan to fall to you at three? I'm just saying the Bulls need something big to happen in their favor.
Well, that's why
I mean, winning the lotto with
what are you giving up? Are you giving up your
not
next
giving
year?
Up? No.
So you're basically saying take the former third overall pick and I mean, is that what you're saying that you're a little old?
No, I'm saying you get him for next to nothing because you have right control.
And
to
he
his
was
rights.
The third overall
and
pick
he'd be
a couple
a
years ago.
Player where you could look at him and decide whether you wanted to sign him. Maybe, hey, you're back at home. I don't know how you do it. I'm trying to debate in my own mind the upside for the Bulls, and I'm coming up short. But then I'm not making a strong argument.
Or is there even, how big is the downside? What possibly?
Well, the downside is you could be mediocre, and that would damage your draft pick. That's the downside. Do you want to be good? Do you want
well,
to
when are
you,
this when
team?
Are you getting him? Are you getting him in February or are you getting him in the next couple of weeks? I mean,
you're getting them later, right?
Okay, so then you have, six, 7 weeks?
Price goes down.
You have seven weeks to make a determination on whether he's the guy and how much can he really damage your wins.
You don't want to go through this sort of a torturous season and then have Zach LaVine come back and then have him come in, and next thing you know, you're as good as you were a year ago, as bad as you were a year ago. 312-644-6767. We'll get to all of it in the 5 and 5 next. It's Mully and Hanley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Come into Firestone Complete Auto Care and get $60 on a Firestone Visa prepaid card by mail when you purchase a set of 4 eligible Firestone tires. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hanley. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley starts now.
Is Sunday's game with the Green Bay Packers the most important test for the Bears in years?
Yeah, this is almost like a playoff game, isn't it? This is kind of a 2-for-1 game. You got the Packers, which is a big rivalry, and you know how much the family cares about that. And you also have a division opponent, and you got a team coming into your place, and they're really struggling, man. If you watch that game the other night, they've never really played good special teams. They don't have a good defense, and they can't run the ball. So you combine that, what do they have? They've scored 10 points and then 17 and 17 in their 3 games without Rodgers. He left early in the first one. So you hold them to 17 points. Can you find a way to score 20? You win the game. Big game for the Bears because it really gets the feel-good going on this season. You really need that out of this team. I would say this is about as important a game as they've had in the John Fox era. You cannot lose to this opponent. You got to win that game, and it sets the tone for the second half of the season, and it kind of takes the momentum you felt you had in the first part. And and it gives you a little justification, and it gets you inching closer to that 500 mark. It's a big deal.
Years, I guess we go back to, 2014, the Chris Conte game. Is that that was actually an important game, an important test, because you would have gone to the postseason, but for the final seconds of that game where the secondary, the man falls down because he's playing a different defense, and there you go, Aaron Rodgers says, oh, looks like I got a receiver open. See you later, Bears. A great column in the Tribune today, Mr. Mulligan, and this really is not the road to the Final Four. This is the road to mediocrity. So if this is your...
But that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
This is your, the gate to greatness. Go ahead and... Yeah, it's a bigger deal if you lose this game. I mean, if you win this game,
right,
you set yourself up with a chance to get to 500 against the Lions, and then I guess the division's in play for you with a little help from the Vikings. But...
You lose this game, everyone's fired again, right?
Yeah,
we're
right.
Back to fire everyone.
You're 3-6, you couldn't beat the Aaron Rodgers-less Packers, you are a favorite in this game. Everything's set up for you to take care of business here. You don't have to get style points. You just have to find a way to put that in the win column. So, unfortunately, I guess the answer is yes, this is the most important test in years for the Bears, and that's because it hasn't been all that great here in the last... Well, certainly in the Fox years, and wasn't certainly all that great in the Emery Trestman years because they're no longer here. So, yep, that's where we're at. This is it. Circle the Sunday's contest with the Packers. This is the litmus test. Help.
Yeah. Do you view this as the year of Trubisky or the year that the Bears can go crazy in the second half and have an outside shot at making the playoffs? You're already three games behind the Vikings. That would be tough to catch them. But I'm going to say no. Because this is not a playoff team. Even if they go 5-3, they're not sniffing the playoffs in the second half. I actually think their last game was more important because I'm looking at the development of Mitch Trubisky, and I get this being a division game, so it's obviously more important. But you go down to New Orleans. That's as tough of a road test as you're going to find. So I wanted to see what Trubisky had in that situation. There's no place tougher to go. There are places as tough, like Seattle. Buffalo's tough to win at, but I wouldn't say tougher. And the Packers are horrible on defense. So I guess this has become more important because the Packers have been losing games and because Aaron Rodgers is out right now.
Buffalo's a tough place. I never really...
Oh, yeah. They're undefeated at home so far. Looking at them as a home dog, I think, this week.
An aside.
But in years, yeah, it's up there because everybody's coming back to the Bears.
I don't know if they keep their jobs if they lose this game.
Because of the Green Bay factor.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Because, I really believe that Mark Trestman lost his job in Green Bay, and it just took the farcical end of that season to confirm it. But it
doesn't matter how, or just you saying flat out loss?
I'm saying you can't lose to Green Bay when they're this bad.
They are really bad, and that's why I don't know if I'd call this a test per se. I think it's an important game because it is the Packers, and you rarely have a chance to beat the Packers, so now you have a pretty good opportunity ahead of you. As they don't have Aaron Rodgers, and it just goes to show how good Aaron Rodgers is, in case anybody had forgotten that you can paper over the cracks on your roster as long as you have an elite quarterback, and that's kind of what Green Bay has seemingly been doing now for the past few years. This roster is not very good up and down, but when you have a guy like Rodgers, you can make it look a lot better. So I think it's an important game, maybe even just more, I don't know, symbolically, mentally, I don't know how I want to phrase it particularly, but as far as a test goes, they've played much tougher opponents. I think it just means more than just one game. It means, beating Green Bay, which they don't often do.
How jacked should Bears fans be if they, in fact, win this game without Aaron Rodgers? I mean, do you still think we knocked off the Packers, or do you think we knocked off...
Yeah, maybe you knocked off the fourth place team.
Yeah, right.
It's always big when it's a division game. It's always big when it's... there's only 16 games, right? Eight of those are in your division. It's a home game. It's the Packers. It gives a guy like Mitchell Trubisky to learn about at least what the fans and the ownerships think is a huge rivalry still. I don't know that Green Bay thinks it's much of a rivalry. I don't know that the players in the Bears locker room think it's much of a rivalry. But it's a home game against a division opponent that you're going to see twice a year moving forward. It's big. Trubisky is who is. It's the biggest four, I think.
So to answer the question is premature. If you ask me 3 or 4 months from now, I'd be in a much better position to answer that question.
Should the Cubs bring John Lackey back as a fifth starter if he wants to play another season?
I mean, how about this? John Heyman reporting that he's not retiring. He's coming back at the tender age, 39, going to pitch yet again. Well, I got news for John. He might not be here for a haircut, but he's going to take a haircut. The $16 million days are over. What I mean, would you sign this guy to a $1 million contract and incentives if I assume he's a starter? We certainly saw the bullpen result. No. I mean, boy, pick your poison. John Lackey's the fifth starter, or Jeff Samardzija. And by the way, you know, Jason Hayward gets his fifth gold glove yesterday. Does that make you feel better about living with Jason Hayward moving forward, or are we still embracing the cast-offs of the Giants for Jason Hayward? I want to know how many teams are actually going to pick up the phone and call John Lackey's agent, and what is he willing to work for that next year? Because it's going to be as bare bones a contract as you can possibly imagine, and we'll see how motivated he is. But no, the Cubs, you know, you want to talk about Wade Davis, I'm right here with you. You want to give me the long shot chance that Jake's coming back? Here's hoping. John Lackey, God bless him. It was fun while he was here, but time to move on.
I'd like to see John Lackey back. I just like John Lackey. I like his antics. I kind of am amused by him. I like some of the stuff he says. I also don't think he's worthless. I think that to get through a major league season, you need a lot of guys. I mean, what, you know, so you throw a couple million, few million at John Lackey. If he can play, great. If he can't, you know, that's okay too. You'll get somebody else, but he gives you cover. And a guy like that, you have any injury or something like that, you know, the old horse gets the smell of the line. Yeah. And, you know,
and then next thing you know, Joe's bringing him out in the ninth inning of a playoff game.
Yeah, well, that's obviously not what you need to do with him. I understand that.
Can I just remove that
first time
as
ever?
As a kind of spot starter,
remove that temptation.
You could do worse than having John. I wouldn't want him to be a regular part of the rotation or, you know, I don't know. I mean, you could do worse than that guy with his history than going with some young guy that you're going to struggle with. I'm not building a pitching staff around him. I'm not saying that this is someone you have to have or anything like that. But to have a guy like that sitting there is it could be of value at some point in the year. Why not? I don't see what the harm is. I don't think he's a bad guy. He's supposedly a really good teammate. I think you could do worse than that, and I would not be opposed to it. I wouldn't rely on him. I wouldn't make him my, you know, lead starter in the playoff series, St. Louis, but I wouldn't throw him out.
Yeah, I would sign him. Yep. As a fifth starter, I absolutely would. You know what you're going to get from John Lackey? He's going to be an innings eater. As a fifth starter, strictly, look around the game. Look at outside
did
a few of the top
rotations. Did he lead the league
in
home run pitches?
I believe he did.
Okay, just one.
But well, also in the second half, he had a sub-4 ERA. How many fifth starters around baseball are doing that for you? I feel like with Lackey, we only rip him when he has a bad outing, and we don't say anything when he gives you 6 innings and 2 runs allowed. And he kind of brings that on himself, though. But the most important thing about Lackey is the guy's available for you every fifth day. 13 of his last 14 years, he's been out there for 27-plus starts every single season. So you know what you're getting. He's reliable. He's not Brett Anderson. I would sign him as a fifth starter.
I mean, if there are no other options out there, if you exhaust all of your other avenues and you do...
What's Brett Anderson doing?
I think that avenue has been explored quite well.
Okay, if that's a choice, I'd John Lackey. Yeah, I'm all aboard.
The drop-off from 16 to 17 for Lackey was pretty vast, and I know he kind of recovered a little bit of his face with a second half that was pretty decent, but I think you don't do this unless it's a last resort-type deal. You know, these old pitchers, it kind of can disappear very quickly, and I don't know if he's going to be able to give you those innings to be eaten, like you just said, Joe. 170 innings pitched last year. I don't see him duplicating that. So I think if you run out of options and you're trying to fill this rotation out come end of the winner here, then you consider it. But it shouldn't be your first, second, third, fourth, fifth option. You should explore all of your other scenarios before you bring John Lackey.
How many do you need to sign? Because I would say at least three starters.
Bring in three is what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, probably. I mean, is Mike Montgomery starting? Is he going to be in the bullpen?
I have no idea.
Who knows, you know?
Well, first I need to hear the argument or the name of the player that's coming in instead of him, and then I could really answer the question. But why not? Especially at a team-friendly number. And even if it's not team, who cares? Not our money. So, sure. For a fifth starter,
Ricketts saved a lot of money this past week when I was gone, huh? Shutting down DNA info? Did you guys talk about that at all? I was on vacation. I don't know if you guys brought it up, but that's got to save them a ton of money. No?
He's an idiot. Next question.
Was it good to see Bobby Portis back with the Bulls, and was his play sustainable?
It was good to see Bobby Portis back. I thought he brought a lot of energy, and I don't know that that is a sustainable performance from Bobby Portis. That was kind of the best of Bobby, if you will, but it was good to see him back. I think, you know, he's got some energy and some crazy to him, and, you know, I like a guy like that. I like energy players, and God, he let him in scoring, didn't he, when all was said and done? So,
yeah.
You know, he had his dream taken away, and he got his dream back, and he doesn't want to lose his dream again. So I would believe it or not, say that, yeah, it was good to see Bobby Portis back. I was pleased with the way he played. I think there are larger issues and other things to discuss regarding it. But, yeah, for one night, I thought he did very well.
Yeah, I don't know that it's sustainable to get 21 points, 13 rebounds in 24 minutes. But I was impressed by the energy and the game he had, the double-double, certainly. More impressed with what he was saying before and after the game. About Nico's here, or I'm here, or I go, he goes, whatever. It's out of my control. I can only control. And they work too damn hard in the summer to have anyone kind of derail that. So I like that mindset that he put in his time, and he's going to take advantage of any opportunity he has with the Bulls. And if that opportunity with the Bulls continues on next year and years to come, that's great. I don't know what to make of Bobby Portis. I always thought that the talk was better than the on-floor production, and his attitude and want to was always better than what we actually saw of him. If in fact he had some sort of transformation over the summer and did put in his time and is going to be this guy where you can count on X number of points and rebounds from him, that's terrific. So I'm warming to the idea that you can have him as part of your future here, and that Nico certainly doesn't want to be here, so you might want to accommodate him and move on from this thing as quickly as possible. Because I think Bobby Portis is really determined to show the Bulls in the league that he's a player, and better late than never, I suppose.
Yeah, it was good to see Bobby Portis. It's what you're looking for out of him, leading the second unit, because the rest of it is built with Valentin, Felicio, Dunn, Felder, guys like that. It was good to see him out there. You brought the energy. 8 of 13 from the field, 3 of 5 on 3. No, that's not sustainable from him, but it was definitely a positive what you got out of Bobby Portis. I was not expecting 21 and 13 out of him last night.
So is this Bobby Portis now? He shoots threes, he rebounds, he brings along actual talent along with the high energy. I mean, if this is what he was doing, if he was hitting the gym that hard during his 8-game suspension, then, you know, I'm all for it. You know, it's all good to see Bobby Portis back in the in the reds and the whites and the blacks. So sustainable, absolutely not. I don't think you're going to see many 3-for-5 three-point shooting nights or any 8-for-13s really on that front either. But, you know, double-digit rebounds, I think that could be something that could be sustainable. It's not like the Bulls have a ton of guys that crash the boards like Bobby does. So partially sustainable. I don't think he's going to be a high-scoring asset going forward. But in terms of rebounding, defense improving a little bit, I think you could see that be sustained a little bit, which is encouraging.
And I'm not even sure how good the Raptors are. I know they got a winning record, but, you know.
In the East.
They'll disappoint soon enough,
yeah.
Believe me.
Usually they get the third seed and bow out.
Yeah.
And now they'll get, what, the sixth seed and bow out.
You hope that the motivation / energy is sustainable. I don't think the numbers are sustainable at all. I think Kevin makes a good point. Sure, the rebounds are probably, but at what cost are we going to
not we, are the Bulls going to slow Markkanen's progress down by giving Bobby Portis more minutes? Again, that you don't want to win games, right, Mully? You mentioned that in the first segment of the show. The idea is play hard.
Yeah, I mean, learn, if that's a rebuild,
learn
yeah.
Hoiball,
get
or
high draft
it's called.
Picks and make smart decisions with said draft
does
picks.
He become the starting five in a league where you really don't have traditional number fives anymore? It's not like they pound the ball down in the block and a guy's playing with his back to the basket and that whole thing. So maybe, but I don't want to see him in there more because he's trying really hard and slowing down what, like it or not, the Bulls' future, which is marketing.
You're never satisfied. You always want a second question, a third question, a fourth question. I just said we'd handle it in the tournament.
What message is the College Football Playoff Committee sending to Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, they flat out said it. The committee chairman said, well, guess what? Miami did more to increase and impress their resume and solidify their resume than the Badgers did. So that's why Miami leapfrogged Wisconsin and now 7 heading into the big game with Notre Dame, number 3 Notre Dame this weekend. And so, you know, it's interesting. Fitzgerald told us the other day when we talked about do you expand the college playoffs, said you're in playoff games right now. And it's not by definition a playoff game. It is an elimination game when you look at Miami-Notre Dame. The loser is out of the conversation for the Final Four. And the winner is firmly in the conversation for the Final Four. And if they win out, they're going to be in there. So to that degree, there are some playoff games going on right now. But Wisconsin, you know, they said basically a win by the Badgers over a 3-win Indiana team did nothing to get their attention in that committee room. So that's the problem Wisconsin faces. Which team are they facing in the Big Ten Championship, assuming they're going to end up there? And how impressed does the committee need to be by said victory over the Eastern representative from the Big Ten?
I think they're sending a bad message, to be honest with you, Brian. I think that they're telling Wisconsin, they're telling college football teams, run up the score. Run up the score. You'll get our attention. Impress us. Don't, you know, throw sportsmanship out the window. Don't worry about developing anyone else on your roster or substituting players. Run up the score. Make sure you can't control who you play now when you're in division play, but earlier in the year, you got to play tougher opponents. That's been their message all along.
That was the opening salvo.
That's the opening salvo. And now, but this now is run up the points.
Well, how about you score points? Whether you're running up the score or actually just
run up. I mean,
give us some sexy. We need TV ratings. We need.
There's no quarters.
Teams that can score.
There's no mercy. You need to score as many points as you can to get our attention. That's what it is.
Okay, you're in a Power 5 conference, Big 10. Good for you. That's not good enough. Do something outside of your conference. And Utah State, FAU, even though they rolled them at BYU, that's not enough. That is the message that is being sent here.
But that was the message they sent already. The new message is, you know, it's not good enough to just beat people. You got to beat the hell out of them. Right? Isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, we already know that's their message.
We stopped saying style points when the playoff happened, but it's still here.
Yeah.
Right? I get Miami being ahead of them. They're coming off a nice victory, and they're going to get a huge shot to make a big jump here if they can take down Notre Dame this weekend. But I was surprised by TCU. I get, you know, TCU did lose at Iowa State, not an easy place to win in conference, but they had a couple of really impressive victories earlier in the year at Oklahoma State and against West Virginia. Now, you have 3 weeks left in the regular season, then you would have the Big Ten title game, assuming they're in that game and undefeated at that point. The schedule is tougher down the final stretch, but I'm just looking at that top five, and even if Wisconsin wins out, I'm wondering if they're doing a setup here. Well, look, you shouldn't be surprised. We had them down around 8 with only a few weeks left in the year if they are kept out, because it just seems like it's going to be tough for them to break that wall of those top 5 teams right now. Those are pretty set at the moment, and it seems like those teams would have to lose to get out of there.
I like that message, Joe. You're not getting in, so it doesn't matter what you do.
That's and more, you know, listen around, and more talking heads said, oh, when it comes crunch time, when it comes to decision time, they're not keeping an undefeated Big Ten team out of this. I don't know where that certainty comes from, because I think they're just reinforcing.
That's what they're saying. Yeah.
They're going to need some help, certainly, and Mully, like you said, you know, strength of schedule is clearly a huge factor in this. Style points, winning by large margins, a huge factor in this. But I want to reevaluate it after they play Iowa, after they play Michigan. Still really two tough games coming up in the next couple weeks, and maybe we'll find out what this Wisconsin team actually is, because you know, they haven't played the toughest opponents quite yet. And now, as it is crunch time here, and then we'll see teams fall from the top, as we always do in November, December. So let's reevaluate.
Where's that
this.
Michigan game?
I believe it's up in Wisconsin.
Okay, so how good is Michigan, and it's your home game? I don't know that that's going to impress anybody.
Their only road game is the last regular season game at Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, you're in trouble.
I'm going to respectfully disagree about running up the score. If you were interested in running up the score and style points, then Oklahoma should definitely be in the top four right now, right? I mean, they would have jumped Clemson this past week if that's all they were looking for.
They can't stop anybody.
Okay, right. They can't stop anybody either. But listen, you got an elimination. You got two elimination games this weekend, right off the bat, right? You've got Notre Dame, Miami. Whoever loses that, it won't be in the Final Four. You've got TCU, Oklahoma, whoever loses that game will definitely not be in the Final Four. Georgia and Alabama likely play each other in the SEC title game. The question is the loser of that game automatically automatically reign in the top four? And are you going to want a rematch potentially of 1-4 in the first weekend of the college football playoff right after they faced each other in the SEC title game? Plus, one of the teams on the rise right now is who? Auburn. Auburn does what? They play Alabama and Georgia before those two teams potentially meet for the SEC. So there's a lot of stuff that could still happen. If Wisconsin takes care of their business, they're going to be right there probably at 5. And then we'll see what happens.
Thank you for the question, though.
Is Joel Quenneville's move to reunite Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Patrick Sharp what the hockey doctor ordered?
It is, I don't know that it's what the hockey doctor ordered, but I think that it is going to a pretty extreme option pretty early in the year. So maybe if you get those guys together and get them all up and running, then you got a power line and you can manipulate things from there. But it seems like it's a pretty drastic move fairly early in the season. I'm not saying it's the wrong move because Joel knows a lot more than I do, but it's pretty interesting to be doing that as early as he's doing it. I can't remember him doing that this early in a season. It tells you something. I'm not sure I know the message.
It's been a few years since he did the so-called nuclear option. Yeah. Certainly with these three, and you know, Sharpie said they have the handler and Kane, the grinder and Toews, and the shooter and Sharpie. I don't know, what's the over-under on goals scored by that line for the first few games? If I set it at, I don't know, 6 for the first 4 or 5 games, are you going over or under for that line in particular? And look, it's not the ideal, but he's got to get someone. They haven't scored more than 3 goals in 13 right. games. I mean, it's early, but it's not that early. So I understand what he's doing here. But if it doesn't work, and it doesn't work quickly and doesn't work consistently, now what? Now what do you do? I mean, now what do you pull out of your bag of tricks? And how does the team respond? Uh-oh, well, now we're really in trouble because we had our three best on the one line, and it didn't get going, and it certainly didn't ignite the second line, because that's what Joel's hope is, that not only, you know, the scoring's contagious, or I guess part of it is if you've paid enough attention to that top line, maybe the second or third line gets going just because the top defensive line isn't going against them. So it's got to work. It's got to work soon, but we'll see. I don't know what the number is, but I would hope they can generate a couple goals right out of the gate and see that get some confidence here.
Yeah, Brian has been talking about this a lot. How many times are you going to go to this? Well, we are 1 month into the season, and he's already gone into the bag of tricks, like 5 times?
Yeah, the bag skate. The old shake up all the lines and the defensive pairings, and yep. Then now here you go, put your top three together and see how that works out.
It kind of says that Joel Quenneville is a lot more worried. He's freaking out a lot more than a lot of Hawks fans that I'm hearing from. I just wonder, okay, if it works, how long do you stick with it? Because historically, when he's gone to this, then he goes back the other way after
right,
a couple
a
of games.
Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, is it
don't you have
Rizzo
to give it
leading off here?
Or? How long a run do you give it?
Well, that's, I mean,
Say they go scoreless the first three games. Do you, get itchy then, or do you have to give it some time to let it go?
If he goes, they go scoreless one game, do you think he's going to stick with it a second?
Hmm.
Wade Quinville operates, probably not. I do think it'll work just because they're a talented team and they're going to bounce back. They're doing this after just one loss here, after winning a couple.
I don't know about this one. 2013 was a long time ago when you initially saw these guys all come together, and a few years before that too with the first cup. I think maybe Joel is going back to what's comfortable for him, what he's seen work in the past. I just don't know how sustainable that it really is here as we're about to turn the clock to 2018. I mean, Patrick Sharp hasn't scored a goal in almost a month. I really don't see this working out. I mean, hey, if it does, Joel's done it again. He's the genius that a lot of people think that he is, but I don't know about this one.
Well, clearly Q knows way more than I do. I just, as a casual Blackhawks and hockey guy, I'm disappointed that you need to split the, you got to put these two together to get something going. These two guys are and were, maybe were is the word, star players, elite, and you shouldn't have to put them both on the line outside of the playoffs to get stuff going in the regular season. That's what's supposed to be so special about them. You should have two really good lines because you've got two really good players. But Joel knows best, and it'll be fun to watch. It's going to make me want to tune in even more than I've already have so far.
All righty, that is the 5 at 5. 312-644-6767 is the number. How important is this Bears game? Is this the season right here? You want to bring John Lackey back as a fifth starter? Apparently he wants to play next year. Why would you not want him? There's got to be a reason. What about Bobby Portis? Did you enjoy seeing him with the Bulls? And is his play sustainable? Will he be their leading scorer again this year? What message is the College Football Playoff Committee sending to Wisconsin? What are they trying to tell them? Are they telling them, get out? Is Joe Quenville's move to reunite Kaner with Taves and Patrick Sharp, is that what the hockey doctor ordered? Is Joel just filling a prescription from the hockey doctor? 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hanley on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.